From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Frederica Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Let's now join Hank and Frederica in their conversation.
I began the Real Choices Project. My immediate practical goal was I wanted to help pregnancy care centers meet the needs of pregnant women. And I had three approaches I wanted to take. One, I sent a survey to all the pregnancy centers in America and got back their idea of what they thought they needed. I wanted to do the same thing with abortion clinics, but I couldn't get any pro-choicers to work with me. The third, though, and I think the one of lasting importance, is I went around the country, and in seven different cities, I sat down with a group of women who had had abortions. Some of them were pro-life, some were still pro-choice, but they'd all had an abortion. And I asked them, what led up to your decision? What caused you to think that this was the best course you could take? Because if they're saying, oh, I needed maternity clothes, then we'd get more maternity clothes. I just wanted to know what they thought the most important need was. Well, Hank, the weird thing is that as I listened to them, a number of them said, I didn't need anything material. I had enough money. I had resources. Or I knew that there was a pregnancy center that would give me everything I need. Often they said it really wasn't anything like that. What I needed was a friend who would stand by me because I was so alone. Over and over, 88% of the time, the women who had had abortions, the reason they did it was for the sake of somebody else, somebody who was pressuring her to have the abortion, maybe. Most of the time, it was the boyfriend or the father of the child. Twice, women told me, I was lying on the abortion table and praying that one said my husband, another said my boyfriend, would burst in the door and say, stop, I changed my mind. So this was not the woman's choice. But in order to hold on to the relationship or because the father of the child is just berating her so much, she ends up going through with the abortion. Some of the time, a smaller percentage, it was somebody else in her family. Perhaps she and the boyfriend said, we'd love to get married, and her parents said, no, you're too young. You know, it was the parents that insisted on the abortion. In a couple of very touching cases, it was my mother was a single mom, and she was sick, and she was working two jobs, and I just couldn't add this extra stress to her life. There were a couple of stories along those lines. But in most of the cases, 88% of the time, there was no practical or material need that pregnancy centers could offer that would have made any difference. But they kept saying, if one person had stood by me, and of course that is what pregnancy centers do. If they have nothing else, they can open the doors and turn on the lights and make the coffee. And if a woman comes in, they can embrace her, they can talk to her, they can be that friend that will help her get through some of the hardest months of her whole life. That's what pregnancy centers exist for, to do that.
To read through those stories in a book on abortion is a real breakthrough. And there are so many aha moments that I had as I read through your book, one of them being that pro-life advocates see their chief role as defending the unborn baby. And then you say, by default, therefore, the woman becomes the enemy. I'd like you to cash that out for people.
Yes, it's such a difficult thing and such a trap for pro-life rhetoric, I think. What I found when I was asking pro-life leaders a while back, if you ask them, why do you do this, they almost always say, because of the baby. That's the main motivator. Even if their entire work for the cause has to do with helping pregnant women, it's ironically, it's the reverse of you're talking the talk but not walking the walk. They were doing an excellent job walking the walk, but if you put a microphone in front of them, they would always say abortion kills babies. And it's true, that is the most galvanizing thing about it. I think if it wasn't causing the death of babies, that perhaps Christians and pro-lifers wouldn't have been as involved or as persistent. But the urgency of it actually being death is what continues to drive us. The point I was making is that this automatically, by default, if pro-lifers are championing the baby, then it immediately looks like people automatically think that, well, where's the other side? Who cares about the mother? And that would be the pro-choicers who are claiming that they're on the side of the mother and we're trying to oppress her. And pro-lifers have tried to rebalance this by saying, love them both. I saw a beautiful drawing of a pregnant woman, and it said, coexist over the front. You know, you can coexist. You're designed to coexist. And we have tried to make a more holistic approach to the question. But if we get caught in that trap where it's as if we're fighting for the baby, but the pro-choicers are fighting for the mother, it backfires on us because the women are the ones who vote. The babies don't get to vote. They don't have any public voice. And they can take photos of the women looking sad, you know, and publish that everywhere. And we can't really combat that. So it's very important that pro-lifers continue to say, love them both. They are an organic unity, and that we're defending both of them.
How do you balance this in terms of the debate between the pro-choice side and the pro-life side, so that the debate is actually a debate that advances the issue as opposed to simply galvanizing people in their own positions?
Yes, it's difficult to do that. And one of the ways I approached it back in the 90s was that I was instrumental in setting up groups where pro-life and pro-choice could come together and talk to each other. We called it common ground. It wasn't a goal that we would try to arrive at a position we both agreed with. That wasn't going to be possible. Instead, we made it clear that we're not here to persuade anybody or change any minds. We just want to understand. I used to say the common ground movement is about clearing away the misunderstandings so we can end up in sincere disagreement. We were still going to disagree at the end of the day. I learned a lot from that experience. We had 12 cities where there were these little groups where pro-life leaders and pro-choice leaders would meet and just sit and talk to each other. One of the things we did was divide up into little groups of four, two of each side, and each person tell the story of why they took the position they did. Why did you come to this position? And then the person from the other side would summarize it and state the other person's position in terms that were not insulting, in terms that they recognized as accurate. Now, if you can imagine being a pro-life person in that position, it's a wonderful feeling of relief to have a committed pro-choice person say back to me exactly, accurately, and respectfully what I believe. I found it very useful, too, as a pro-life person, because I wanted to understand what motivated pro-choicers. You know, that's even just a kind of research on your opposition you want to do. Figure out what is motivating them, and if there are ways to resolve their discomfort, and hopefully coax them over to the pro-life side. So it was helpful to do that, and I feel like I learned a lot. One of the things I particularly noted was that the pro-choicers were all over the place in terms of what they believed. You know, some of them would say, but I don't think there should be abortion after 12 weeks, or I don't think it ought to be legal except in these exceptional circumstances. They didn't agree with each other about how abortion should be legal or illegal. And yet the pro-lifers were absolutely of one mind. I remember a pro-choicer saying to me, any thinking person has to be deeply ambivalent about abortion. And I thought, I'm not ambivalent. You know, I don't have any ambivalence about this issue. I feel like there's a very clear moral and spiritual danger here. And I'm not wondering how I stand in relation to that. So that was encouraging in a way, to think that pro-choicers are actually not as united as we might think, and that they are, as my friend said, deeply ambivalent. There's an ambivalence there that I think things are going to turn around. Here we are almost 50 years since Roe v. Wade, but there's encouragement in the polls. There's encouragement here and there. I think eventually this country's going to turn around on the issue.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Frederica Matthews Green. For decades, debate has raged between pro-life and pro-choice advocates in the political realm. Should abortion remain legal or not? Is it a necessary evil or an evil so great that it must not be permitted? Which is more important, a woman's right to choose or a baby's right to life? But instead of pitting the baby's rights against the mother's, is there a way to help them both? Whichever side of the political battle you're on, you owe it to yourself to discover how our society can begin to offer troubled pregnant women some real choices. To receive your copy of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion by Frederica Matthews Green, call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the Journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us online at equip.org.
Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Frederica Matthews Green as they continue their conversation.
Here we are almost 50 years since Roe v. Wade, but there's encouragement in the polls. There's encouragement here and there. I think eventually this country's going to turn around on the issue.
Elaborate on that. That's a stunning statement.
Yes, yes. One of the things, I was reading a wonderful article by Marvin Olasky in World Magazine. The viewpoint split now, according to Gallup, is 46% call themselves pro-choice, 49% call themselves pro-life. Now, that puts pro-life only a few points ahead of pro-choice. The thing about it is, though, is that the label, you know, pro-choice is the cool label. That's the one that's socially approved, so that's the one people want to use. And to think that a majority will actually call themselves pro-life when pro-lifers are despised, when we are lied about, when we are castigated and hated everywhere, that people still feel so strongly about it that they will take that label, I think is really a big thing. And another statistic I saw here, I hadn't heard about this, you know, at the race for the governor of Virginia, I'm reading from the Washington Examiner, Terry McAuliffe, who lost, the Democrat who actually lost, spent millions telling voters that his opponent would sign a restrictive abortion law like the one in Texas. Exit polling showed that when they asked voters, what was your main reason for your choice, those who said their main reason was the abortion issue went for the Republican candidate by 20 points. So way ahead of those who would vote on a pro-choice basis was people voting on a pro-life basis. We just don't hear much about this because it doesn't fit the preferred narrative. I'm sure you've touched on that many times, that it's going to be a big surprise to the media when the pro-life movement starts to kind of stretch its muscles and become more evident because they don't think it's possible. It doesn't fit the way that they look at life. But I think that it is going to turn around in time. Just the advent of sonograms made a huge difference in creating that ambivalence about it. And people don't feel united in this cause. I'm surprised so many will even take the label pro-life upon themselves. But they're not satisfied with what's happening. And many people said that they thought there should be no abortions after 12 weeks. That, in fact, is the law in much of the world. In France, it's no abortions after 12 weeks. And here in the Dobbs case before the Supreme Court, it's 15 weeks, and people are still being, you know, distressed about that and doing all the beating of the breasts. But it's something people prefer. They want to see it more restricted than it is.
You know what's really interesting is that the United States has about the most liberal policy with respect to abortion. Maybe there are some countries more liberal like Canada, but it is really open in the United States compared to, as you just mentioned, other countries like France or even the Netherlands where I was born.
Yes, that's right. It's, as we think of the nations of Europe leading the world in liberalism, it's totally not the case when it comes to abortion. Three-quarters of the nations in the world, including most of Western Europe, have bans against abortion after 12 weeks. And so America's way outside the field there compared to other countries, where that belief, that acknowledgement that it actually is a human life, people are making room for that. But in America, it has to be this juggernaut that rolls over everybody. And in some states, as in New York, they want to make it legal up through 9 months, right up to the point of birth.
I probably should have done this at the very beginning of this podcast, but I think it's important to give people a perspective, Frederica, on just how significant, how macro this issue is. When you look at the foundation of civilization, life is that foundation. On that foundation, there are pillars like marriage, church, government and so on. But the foundation is life. And I think we need to impress upon people just how significant this is. I'm looking at a quote from your book where you say, "Surely any society that makes mother and child enemies is slowly committing suicide." And then you say, "When we institutionalize the violent ripping of a child from her mother's womb, we violate something disturbingly close to the heart of the human story. In the land where women kill their unborn children, every lesser love grows frail." So you've really encapsulated the significance of this issue. And I want to really focus on that for a few moments, because I think so many people, again, as we said earlier on, have abortion fatigue. They don't want to talk about it. And you're saying, let's talk about it. It's a significant issue. And oh, by the way, we may be winning this war.
Yes, yes. So there is hope. And I think we will win this war for exactly the reason that that little excerpt that you quoted there, because this is the heart of the human story, is the life beginning in the woman's womb, just one cell, two cells, four, six, eight. That is where all humanity comes from. As you were saying, other institutions like marriage and the family and the legal system, all that stands on a foundation of human beings actually existing and actually making it all the way to birth intact. That has to be the very first thing. And that the love between a mother and her unborn child is so iconic that if that's distorted and turned into enmity or an imaginary possibility that the two of them are fighting each other and only one can survive, that's so distorted and so dark. It cannot be something that remains forever. It has to be challenged. What could be more ugly than that? I sometimes use the example of if there was a zoo and the female mammals started trying to abort their pregnancies, if they were trying to find the little grasses and leaves that would make them go into contractions and expel the unborn baby, or if they were like trying to hurt themselves by falling on rocks or something, the zookeeper would not say, "Well, I'll make it easier for them to abort their unborn species, whichever species it is." He would know immediately there's something terribly wrong in the environment that my animals are living in. I have to identify what that was and correct it. So the emphasis from the pro-choice side that it is the woman, her body, her life, her choice, all of those first-person singulars that see it just as her all alone, that indicates the problem, which is that a culture can't exist unless we bond with each other and rely on each other. It begins with a bond between the mother and the child. But we have created such an atomized culture where it's every man for himself, every woman for herself, every individual. As our culture just falls to pieces and there is no more trust, it's destructive of on a grander scale than when we usually think about abortion just applying to the baby.
I want to talk about two things. You just mentioned a slogan. Talk about slogans, good and bad. You know, let's say the slogan, "It's a baby," or "Let the woman decide." But I also want to talk about paradoxes, if you would. You have pointed out that even though a majority call abortion murder, it's the kind of murder that somehow or other we want to keep legal.
I know. And I was thinking just the other day how telling it is that pro-choicers accuse pro-lifers of being opposed to sex, as if, almost as if they're granting that if I didn't have abortion, I couldn't be free to have sex without commitment as much as I want to, as if it really is about sex for them. And that's just part of the atomizing of our culture, that people want to be free to have sex with other people with no commitment to each other. And I've been thinking lately about how strange the whole gender thing is, because now it's, you know, it used to be sex required at least two people, right? And now it's all these people all by themselves standing up as separate individuals and saying, this is my sexuality. They have even managed to make sex no longer something about uniting with another person. It's just the bumper sticker on your car. So this disintegration of our culture, in some ways, that's the thing that worries me the most. This extreme individualism, where you renounce any commitment to anyone else or any responsibility for anyone else. We're all just little satellites whirring and whizzing around the world and occasionally bumping into each other. That is a profoundly disturbing thing to me, and I think it will have very high costs as the years go by.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Frederica Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.